Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
All right. What are the worst takes of the week? You can help us out with this. 713-780-ESPN. You can tweet us the worst takes whenever you see them throughout the week. We'll queue them up, save them for Thursday at 2. 713-780-3776. What are the worst takes of the week that we have to welcome in to Bad Take Boulevard? I'm sure that you saw this. I'm sure everybody saw this. Aaron Judge hit home run number 61 last night. Congratulations to Aaron Judge being tied for seventh all-time in the single-season Major League Baseball home run record. Roger Maris Jr., yes, the son of Roger Maris, spoke after the game yesterday, talking about Aaron Judge, talking about 61. And Roger Maris thinks that Aaron Judge should be the single-season home run king.
Well, I think it means a lot, and it's not just for me. I think it means a lot for a lot of people, you know, that he's clean, he's a Yankee, he plays the game the right way, and, you know, I think it gives people a chance to look at somebody who, you know, should be revered for hitting 62 home runs and not just as a guy who did it in the American League. He should be revered for, you know, being the actual single-season home run champ. I mean, that's really who he is if he hits 62. And I think that's what needs to happen. I think baseball needs to look at the records, and I think baseball should do something.
Roger Maris Jr. saying that the guy that tied his dad for seventh all-time in a single season for home runs at 61 should be the true home run king. It shouldn't be Barry Bonds, who hit 73 home runs in 01. It shouldn't be McGuire, who hit 70 in 98, or Sosa, who hit 66 in 98. Aaron Judge, according to Roger Maris Jr., is the home run king for a single season. Welcome to Bad Take Boulevard, Mr. Roger Maris Jr.
No question. I mean, weren't you the actual person that was knee-deep in the middle of all the being flown here and tickets there and celebrating all of the above?
And, oh, was he really?
Oh, yeah. He and his family were there front and center.
Free trips to San Fran.
And McGuire. He was there with McGuire first. Then he was there with Sammy. I mean, I think they were there with Sammy. But then they were definitely there with Bonds. And it's like, look, last time I checked, and I think I saw either Buster Olney or someone the other day, and Kirkjian also was on this, and it might have been on our station on one of the shows, that said, look, as much as I know people have issues with Barry Bonds and whether he did or he didn't, as it stands right now, he didn't do anything wrong. And he did whatever he did, and there's no penalty from Major League Baseball pulling those records away. You have to tip your cap and acknowledge what they were able to do. I think it was kind of a cheap shot.
A lot of the ethics police right now are saying that Aaron Judge should be the home run champion, and they're totally forgetting the fact that if you want to start in 1998 when Mark McGuire hit the 70, when Sammy Sosa hit the 66, saved the game of baseball after the strike of 94, and then in 2001, there was nobody. The Major League Baseball wasn't checking for steroids. It was not against the rules of Major League Baseball. And the reason that Barry Bonds started juicing was because Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa were juicing in 98, and Barry Bonds thought that it was a mockery of the game. And he said, you know what? If they're going to do it, I need to do it as well because I'm the best player in baseball. And then Barry Bonds proved that 3 years later when he hit 73 home runs. Aaron Judge is not in the class of Barry Bonds. Aaron Judge should not be mentioned in the same breath as Barry Bonds. He's now tied for seventh. That's what it should be, Roger Maris Jr. All right, let's get to our next one on Bad Take Boulevard. You saw what Ken Dorsey did, the offensive coordinator for the Bills?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he annihilated his notes and his iPad and all kinds of stuff.
I saw a lot of people talk about this, saying that it was unprofessional, that it was unwarranted, that Ken Dorsey cannot be carrying himself like this. Kyle Brandt, probably the most notorious name that came out speaking of this about Ken Dorsey, saying that Ken Dorsey lost the day with his outburst that will follow him throughout his career.
I don't agree with that at all. His own wide receiver loved it and said it's probably not the right take that people want to hear, but he loved it because it showed how passionate he is about his team, his offense, and that he wants them to win. And I don't think it's anything that's going to stick with him and keep a team from making him their head coach someday and believe that they got the right guy with an offensive mind. I mean, the fact that we saw Tom Brady do it twice now against the Saints, I believe both times, but they said the second time he did it, it wasn't just one, he destroyed two of them. So if you're going to destroy electronics because you're that passionate about your team winning, most people aren't going to find that as a mark against you.
I do think it will follow him throughout his career.
Oh, it'll be his thing, right?
It's not going to follow him around his career to the point where Kyle Brandt said it's going to be a negative in his life and his resume. In fact, I think it's the opposite. I think it's a positive that you have a coach with fire, passion, and cares about winning football.
I'm not on the side of thinking it's negative, but I do think he's going to be the guy. Like, there's going to come a day 5-10 years from now when somebody's team goes, hey, that's that guy from that Bills video.
I don't know.
Oh, I do.
I don't like. I think people will always remember that about Ken Dorsey, but he was also a standout college quarterback. He's also going to be a head coach again in the NFL at some point. Like, coaching outbursts are all the time. Like, okay, Herbert Edwards, we got to play to win the game. That follows him around for the rest of his career, but it's not a negative. Jim Mora having an outburst talking about the playoffs.
Not saying it's negative.
Right.
Just saying it will follow him.
Yeah. I mean, people are going to be like, oh, yeah, that's the guy that they got mad in the press box. Okay, cool. He cares about winning a football game. Like, people were saying it was unprofessional. What? He's a football coach trying to win a football. How is that unprofessional?
How many times have we seen headsets thrown and tantrums because of wins and losses or things that happen on the field? The passion and the fire is what a fan base wants. Look at why your guy is doing such a great job with the Lions, Campbell. Because the fact that he's certifiably nuts in a lot of ways and he says and does some outrageous things that the fan base believes can motivate the team on a regular basis and they like it.
Yeah. Here's we agree on this one. Another bad take. Welcome, Kyle Brandt to Bad Take Boulevard. This one's an oldie, but a goodie. And her Minnesota Twins were eliminated from playoff contention. Carlos Correa missing the playoffs, right? I believe it's only the second time in his career. Missed it in 16 and now is missing it again in 2022. So Twins eliminated from the playoff contention.
Does that mean Correa time is in need of a battery?
Correa time will be off the clock when the playoffs begin. It'll be off the clock when the playoffs begin. It'd be interesting if Carlos Correa hates missing the playoffs so much that maybe he opts out and signs a deal with the playoff team. But this is an oldie and a goodie because a lot of people told us when Carlos Correa left that his best attribute was his leadership. That the way he can command a pitching staff from the shortstop position by walking to the mound and paying pitchers some mound visits, that the Astros will never be able to replace that. That they just won't be able to overcome what was the leadership of Carlos Correa. The Astros have a chance to match and even surpass the record for single season wins in franchise history. How's that one going? How are the Astros being able to replace the Carlos Correa leadership? I don't think it's been a factor at all this year.
No.
Not
at all.
Once.
And you know who does really good mound visits and is very, very inexpensive? Mm-hmm. Maldonado.
Martin Maldonado, not bad at it.
Yep. He's basically said, I mean, you don't have to be a mega $1 million shortstop to make mound visits. And, you know, you just have to have leadership from a veteran perspective. And so be it. You know what? Kudos. I've said this before. I'll say it again. And I didn't see it at the time, but kudos to Click and whoever else had a part in the decision of knowing that Jeremy Peña was not only there, but he was ready and he would be a guy that could do anywhere close to what Correa's done all year. And oh, by the way, he leads all shortstops in runs saved defensively. I know he made an error last night, but that's something that a lot of you guys like to come at us about when we mention what a good defender he is. Later in the game, he made a really good play, too. Those things get swept under the rug. It's always wanting to point a finger when he doesn't. But when you look at the stats that don't lie, he's done a hell of a job defensively at shortstop.
Look, Correa's still a better player than Jeremy Peña. Not going to dispute that. Not going to argue it. Is he $34 million better than Jeremy Peña?
No,
absolutely not. Not even close. That's not disputable. That's not something you can argue. But this is specifically the Carlos Correa attribute where he's such a great leader. That is his best attribute. No, it's not. His best attribute's his bat. His best attribute's his glove. It's his cannon arm. It's not that leadership. Yeah, he's a leader, but it's not his best attribute. All right, this one I got to ask you if it's a bad take. James Harden believes that he's back to MVP form. Quote, courtesy of SiriusXM, I've always said that if my conditioning can be level with my skill set, my IQ, and the work I put in, it's MVP.
Who said that?
James Harden. James Harden believes he's back to MVP form. I've always said that if my conditioning can be level with my skill set, my IQ, and the work I put in, it's MVP. James Harden saying he's calling his own shot. He's going to be the MVP.
Basically, because as we transition from Carlos Correa discussion to this one, it's a make or break year for a guy like Carlos Correa was a year ago. This is a James Harden that has a lot to prove because he took a lot less money and lost a lot of money in the process because everybody pointed a finger at from his weight to his inability to do the things that he did as a Rocket when he was at MVP caliber level. And so suddenly the wake-up call was, well, maybe I do have to work out in the offseason a little bit more. Well, maybe I shouldn't come in with the freshman 15. Maybe I should do some things a little differently. Well, he's going to try. I mean, our guy on the network side, Greg from Philly, was asking me, do you believe it? And do you believe? I said, I'll believe it when I see it for a full season. Because the minute that something goes wrong and aggravates him, does that mean he's going to go to a buffet or he's going to go to the media and say he can't play with these guys this way and he wants the team to bend over backwards for him?
You know where they have good buffets?
Tell me. The casinos.
Late night buffets.
Tell me.
I mean, James Harden has jerseys hanging
Vegas.
In the raft.
Oh, strip club.
There you go. Yeah. James, do you think it's a bad take, though, that James Harden thinks he's going to be the MVP? Does that belong on Bad Take Boulevard, yes or no?
Well, I think he should think that way. But I think if he thinks it's really, really going to happen, he's playing with a guy on his own team that has a better
chance. He's not going to be the MVP on his own team. You know what bothers me? I don't mind him talking about his skill set, like being a good basketball player. What kind of bothers me is anytime somebody talks about their own IQ. Like, my basketball IQ is top-notch. It's elite. Like, I don't have a problem if you tell me you're a great player. I don't have a problem if you tell me that on the floor you're outstanding. But whenever you say that you have outstanding basketball IQ, for some reason that bothers me.
That's fine. I mean, I think a lot of it is, you know, you believe your own clippings. Because forever and a day, the big thing about James when he was a Rocket was, my God, the way he sees the floor, his passing abilities is off the charts. I mean, the thing that he doesn't get enough credit for because he does so much with scoring the basketball, and even Charles Barkley said he might be the most amazing offensive weapon he's ever seen in this era, and he tried to come back off of it a little later. But I think he believes his own clippings and then starts. He's never been short on confidence and believing to tell the world how great he is. So there's just another opportunity.
Bob Nightingale covers Major League Baseball for USA Today. He joins the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP listener line. We're being joined now, lucky enough to be joined by Bob Nightingale, covers Major League Baseball for USA Today. Bob, thanks so much for hanging out with the Killer Bees for a few minutes on this Thursday afternoon. We'll start national with you. We were just welcoming in Roger Maris Jr. to a very elite club here with the Killer Bees. Aaron Judge hit his 61st home run yesterday. Roger Maris Jr. thinks that if he hits another, he should be the true home run champ for a single season. Where do you stand in this conversation?
Well, I think the American League champion, he's not the home run champion, it's Barry Bonds. I mean, they're not taking that out of the record books. You start doing that, we just start saying, okay, guys who were juicing and win the World Series, we're going to take those World Series titles away from the Yankees because those guys, they take the World Series title away from, you know, from the Houston Astros. So you go on and on, but no, there's the two home run champions, still Barry Bonds. And somebody will break it one day. Maybe Judge will. You know, it's still cool. You know, Yankee being a Yankee in that record standing for so long in the American League. You know, 61 years. That's amazing. So, you know, to me, that's impressive enough.
Bob, I'm curious, and we were having this conversation, but as you mentioned it, which baseball is worth more, the judge ball last night or the 700 ball from Pujols?
You know, this is from what I read. I was stunned that the 700 home run ball was worth maybe 100,000 tops, and they thought the Judge ball would be over a million, and the 62 ball would be worth 2.5. I don't get worth 2.5 million. I know McGuire ball was $3 million, but then Bonds broke that, so he way overpaid for $3 million. So they said there's a huge difference just because of that. And one of the reasons is just because, the whole New York bias. I mean, a Yankee record. If Judge played for any other franchise, the ball wouldn't be worth that much.
So to parlay that around New York and the New York bias and everything else, is there any argument for anybody other than Aaron Judge for most valuable player with another year of Shohei Ohtani doing both from a pitching perspective and hitting and others that might be in line?
No, absolutely not. If the Angels are in first place, it would be a debate. They're in fourth place. You know, it's not the best player award. It's valuable. People forget that word valuable, and the Yankees aren't in first place without Judge. They may not even make the playoffs without Judge. If it's just about best player, Yeah, and that happened when he gave to Barry Bonds 20 straight years, or Pujols 10 straight years when he was in St. Louis. So it's about what you do. You know, I remember going back to 88. Kirk Gibson's numbers were completely dwarfed by Daryl Strawberry, but he won the MVP because of what he meant to the Dodgers. Pelton went over Bonds in 91, just because Pelton finally getting Atlanta, you know, to the playoffs after all those years. So, you know. I think it's got to come from a team least contention or wins divisions or in the playoffs if it's close. And I don't think this is particularly close. You know, there's 30 votes out there. I bet Judge gets at least 24 of them.
Mike Trout, people are probably wondering, well, how did Mike Trout get all those MVPs? Bob Nightingale joining us on the HRNP guest line. We're, of course, in Houston. The Astros' magic number to clinch the top spot in the American League is one game. Can you shape up the AL playoffs? What kind of gauntlet is it going to be for the Astros and all the other teams that are lucky enough to get into the dance?
Well, the Astros are a team to beat, and they're the best team in the American League, easily. Remember now when they played the Yankees seven times, never once the Yankees come up to bat with the lead. That's how dominant the Astros were. The American League parent once again goes to Houston. You know, I think the only, the Yankees should be the team that they play in the ALCS. I think the only team that could be a legitimate spoiler is the Seattle Mariners, just because of that starting rotation. You know, we got Luis Castillo and Robbie Ray and Logan Gilbert. That's a tough thing, and they got a great bullpen. That being said, it's a very young team, and they've kind of stumbled down the stretch. So you wonder how they do under pressure.
Bob, I'm curious on the other side, because we don't talk about it as much being in the American League and obviously where the Astros sit. From a National League perspective, it just seems like there's so many teams, including the Dodgers, who obviously have set the standard with the best record in baseball. But when you look at any series that involves the Mets and you could go DeGrom and Scherzer in games 1 and 2, you got a chance. The Cardinals have gotten hot and gotten, you know, stronger as the season has gone on. So you got to consider them in the mix. And the Braves with their young pitching and the way that they've continued to add. It seems like that the National League is going to be just a fight to the finish in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I could easily see a rematch of last year's World Series. I still think Atlanta's the best team going in, at least, for a short series. You know, granted, the Dodgers are the best team over a 162 games. They've proven that with 107 wins already. But, with the Dodgers, you got, two guys, Julio Urias and Clayton Kershaw, in a massive drop-off. They have no idea who's going to close for them. So I don't like their chances in a short series against the Mets or Atlanta. The Cardinals, who knows? I think a lot depends on Wainwright. You're going to get the Wainwright that's been ace, or sometimes he's been mediocre, particularly lately. So I'm not sure you're going to get there. San Diego can scare you, too, when they have Yu Darvish is pitching lights out. So has Blake Snell, and you got Mike Clevenger, you got Joe Musgrove, the homegrown guy. So they can scare you, especially having Machado and Soto in the lineup, even though Soto hasn't been the same guy since the trade. But they're a scary team.
It's Bob Nightingale joining us on the HRNP guest line. Covers Major League Baseball for USA Today, one of the very best in the business. Justin Verlander pitched yesterday, pitched pretty well. It looks like he's going to win the AL Cy Young. Curious if you agree with that notion. But also, what do you expect in the offseason for Justin Verlander?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. He'll win the Cy Young going away. It'll be interesting. I mean, people are so scared of the age. He did have Tommy John surgery already, so that probably helps him. He's a very, very loyal guy, and he knows, hey, when I signed that extension, I was hurt for, most of 2 years with that thing. So I kind of owe them back, too, from what happened, that they believe in me. So I think he goes year to year. It's a player option. Maybe it goes up to, say, $35 million next year with a $35 million option. Maybe 40. I'm not sure it'll go that high. I'm not sure how many bidders will be in that market with his age. But I would think that he opts out. And I still think he stays in Houston. I really do. I mean, why do you leave that situation?
Well, and with that situation, Bob, we were just talking about earlier in the show, the pending free agents for the Astros. But the fact that, you know, we're always talking about the longevity of this team. How long can this team stay where it's at, or at least close to it? I've seen some national prognosticators say, including some ESPN guys on the air, say, look, as soon as the start of next season, the American League West is going to be the toughest division in baseball. And all these, you know, you mentioned the Mariners. And then if the Angels could ever get it right. And, you know, ifs, buts, candies, nuts. But we know what the starting pitching looks like for the Astros. And we know that they've got a core in the middle of their lineup that Altuve and Bregman even don't seem to be going anywhere anytime soon. What do you think about the Astros? And then with their free agency, if it's not Verlander, it's Diaz, it's, you know, Trey Mancini, do you bring him back or don't? Is Vasquez a guy that would consider staying, or is he going to take the money? What are your thoughts?
No, I think the window's wide open still for the Astros. I mean, people were saying that last year this time. So, okay, the window's closing, this is a last chance. And look what they've done. I mean, all the buildup with Texas, you know, Rangers, you know, where does all that money got them? You know, Mariners can be scary, but let's be honest, without expanding postseason, they don't make the playoffs. You know, Angels, you know, year after year, you know, doing the same thing. So I still think that the Astros are a team to beat. You know, and with a great young rotation, they could be great for, you know, quite a while. So, you know, we'll see about Vasquez. You know, you still have Maldonado there, so they don't have to, you know, have him. I would think he'd probably get, you know, a lot more money somewhere else and leave. Maybe to get a, you know, another catcher to platoon Maldonado, or maybe even be his backup. And we'll see. You know, maybe they bring Brantley back too. You know, I'm sure he'll come at discount price, you know, considering, you know, his injury. So, yeah, there's no reason in the world why the Astros won't be the team to beat again next year.
Bob, we always appreciate the insight. Great stuff as always. Enjoy the conversation. Hope to chat soon.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
It's Bob Nightingale, covers Major League Baseball for USA Today. Are the Astros easily the best team in the AL? Do we agree with him that the window is wide open? Also, some Thursday night football to look forward to. Miami-Cincinnati, pretty sexy Thursday night matchup in the NFL tonight. Skiller Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Down.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Bob Nightingale says that the Astros are easily the best team in the American League. Willing to go that far?
I don't say easily. I'd say...
I think they're the best team in the American League. Easily scares me. This is the conversation we were having the other day about how there's no team in the American League that can beat the Astros. And that, like, conversation scares me. That word easily scares me, too.
He's been bullish on Seattle every time we talk to him. And I'm surprised that he's not on the Toronto bandwagon. Because even the one thing that I was reminded of yesterday night, flipping back and forth, and I caught Judge's home run.
Yeah, I did too, actually. It was weird.
But the crowd in Toronto, when you remember when they were in their heyday, when they were making playoff runs or whenever they're in the playoffs, their crowd takes it up about six notches and fills that place. And the Rogers Center is a tough place to play, where they do legitimately have a home field advantage when they play there. And then you talk about a team that really, they're so cocky and young that they really don't fear anyone. The Mariners, again, the reason why I don't fear them is because you've proven that you're their daddy. Like, every time that they put this milestone out there or start talking mess or their manager gets tough, you come in and put them back in their place, put them in their room, shut the door, don't feed them supper, and it's all over. But I think with Toronto, it's a different story, because we've talked about they have one young player, and now all of a sudden after signing with this mega deal, his back is an issue. We don't know what factor he could be. But when you look at Bichette and you look at Vladdy Jr., and you know they got a guy that knows you better than anybody in center field, and you look at the pitching that they've paid for, and the fact that they could legitimately have an advantage when they play home games, I think that's something that you have to take note of and going, I don't care if the Yankees are playing great, not so great, or in between. I think Toronto's a team that if I could do anything to adjust where the teams are for the playoffs starting, I'd love to put Toronto in the Yankees bracket and take anybody else.
Looking at that, probably not going to happen.
No, it's not.
Cleveland's going to be the 3-seed. I mean, the Astros, Yankees, Cleveland are 1, 2, 3. There's currently a race for 4th and 5th. Like, I mean, Seattle's only a half game back at Tampa, but they're 2.5 of Toronto. So, I mean, Toronto's the 4-seed. If Toronto finishes to the 4-seed, they're going to be in the bracket with the Astros. I really don't see in a way that you're going to avoid it. Now, you might have Toronto-Seattle as 4-5, which I'd rather have Toronto-Tampa as 4-5. I'd rather keep Seattle in that 6th spot So kind of shaping up the tournament that way. I'm worried about all three of those teams.
You should be.
I don't, you know, it's that conversation we're having. You know, just being scared of the crapshoot that is the playoffs.
Yeah, it's not even being worried about any other team. It's about being worried about blowing a tire in the postseason. Because, again, I always go back to that Warriors analogy, the year they set the regular season record for most wins ever, but they didn't win the title. And that's the biggest letdown you can have is you're riding on top of the world. You know that you've set all these major accomplishments for the season that have been boxes checked. And then you go into the postseason and you stub a toe, pop a tire, and before you know it, you're on your couch watching the World Series going, what the heck just happened to us? And that's what I fear the most. I don't fear specific teams. Mm-hmm. I fear this team tripping and falling.
Yeah, same. 6602, y'all scared of the Dodgers, though. I'm really,
no.
Like, I haven't just paid attention to the National League. Like, you get to the World Series, you worry about it then. Like, I haven't looked ahead to the National League. Are the Dodgers a really good baseball team? Yeah. So are the Mets. So are the Braves. The National League's going to be a gauntlet. The National League's going to be fun to watch.
The hell out of each other.
Yeah, me too. I hope they all go the distance. I hope the pitching is taxed. I hope that they're all worn out by the time they get to the World Series. And hopefully, the Astros can win the gauntlet in the American League. 3300 to 337 area code. Where's 337?
I think it's another
Lafayette.
I was going to say another Louisiana area code.
Which you should be taking advantage of Lafayette travel. Anyways, Lafayette, we're going to call him that. He texted in, as a baseball fan, Lafayette says, Judge hitting 61 was a big deal. I'm not a Yankee fan, but it is a significant record. If it was Jordan hitting 61, y'all would have much different energy on your takes. No, I wouldn't. Look, 61 is great. It matches Roger Maris, who for the longest of times was the record holder in Major League Baseball. I understand the significance of 61, but I'm not going to sit here and crown Yordan Alvarez, if it was him hitting 61 and not Aaron Judge, as the home run champion. That's Barry Bonds. I lived through it. I was live for home run number 70 when Barry Bonds hit it over that little tomato can lefty that the Astros were throwing. Like, I lived that. That Barry Bonds 73 was very real, tangible. It happened. He's probably the best baseball player ever.
He is the most feared weapon ever in a batter's box in Major League Baseball, steroid-driven or not.
Mm-hmm.
The way he was walked intentionally and pitched around was because of the fact that he could do damage at any time and anywhere, even if it wasn't in the zone. And that's something that you have to tip your cap to.
Yeah.
But I think as it relates to, you know, the bigger story, and we're trying to, what's the best way to kind of sum it all up? You know,
the Judge 61,
the Judge situation,
great season.
Is it Lafayette or laugh at it? Because to me, I laugh at it because you haven't asked me. Because to me, I look at it and say, you had Jeter, right? I hated the Yankees, but I respected the hell out of Derek Jeter. And dare I say, he was almost likable by the way he handled his business. I look at Aaron Judge the same way. I watched that last night. I'm not rooting against Aaron Judge. I don't want him and the Yankees to beat the Astros, but I think he seems like he comes off as a genuinely really good dude.
Yeah, I don't dislike Aaron Judge. What I have issue with are the Roger Maris Jr. saying that this is the real record, that you have like the baseball, like what did I call him a little bit earlier, where this is like the staff of ethics. This is the ethical staff what is like appropriate for baseball. You have all these elitists. Oh, Roger Clemens is the Hall of Famer.
Is what they are, essentially.
They're the ethic baseball police. No, Barry Bonds is the home run champion. I have a problem with the take. I don't have a problem with Aaron Judge. Look, Aaron Judge is having a great year. Is he having a year that is the single season home run champion? No.
I have a problem with the fact that where he plays is a factor in everything that he does.
See, that's where I think that the conversation can be had. We were talking about Aaron Judge the other day. Every at-bat was being broken into on, like, big-time college football on Saturday.
Yep.
Does that happen if Yordan Alvarez is chasing 61?
No.
No chance.
We both said no. That's where I'm coming from. It's that New York bias that gets him extra love that he doesn't need.
Yeah.
Right? He is, on his own merits, the best baseball player in baseball this season, in my opinion. He is the MVP. He's done a lot. I'm not even bringing steroids into any conversation with Aaron Judge. I'm tipping my cap saying, good dude, genuinely looks like he's extremely loved by his teammates, doing great things, great for the game, tip my cap, congratulations. But because it's New York, they're going to oversell it to you. No matter how much he's doing that makes me tip my cap, I'm going to be told I have to give him more and do more, and I'm force-fed, like you said, with breakaways from other sports, that I have to give him more flowers. No, I've given him enough I'm not going to give him the whole greenhouse.
1790 says Judge was adopted. Bet his mom or dad wishing they had a do-over. That's so messed
That's
up.
Terrible.
He's probably not wrong, though. He's probably not wrong. His biological mother and father probably looking at Aaron Judge, hitting all these home runs, making all this money, probably wish that they had a do-over. That's messed up. We don't know the situation behind it. We don't know the situation behind it. I do not condone that text, 1790. Stop texting us mean things about Aaron Judge. 713-780-ESPN. Don't text us mean things about Judge or the Yankees. 713-780-3776.
I love how you always just quickly, subtly just punch that number right in there quickly.
There's a Thursday night football game tonight. Miami Dolphins are looking to stay undefeated. They're on the road to take on Cincinnati. The Bengals looking to avoid a 1-3 start, the defending AFC champions. I'm surprised the Bengals are 3.5-point favorites in this game. I know they're at home. I know that they're defending AFC champions. I know that that Dolphin win over Buffalo was low-key miraculous, where the Bills gained like 500 yards and the Dolphins gained like 200 yards. Man, I'm not sold on Cincinnati. I just laid down a bet on BetUS, a little Miami money line. I'm going a little Miami money line on Thursday night football. That's
What's
not great. That's not great taking a road team on a short week, by the way. I just thought of that. 3.5, Cincy's favored. Since he's favored by 3.5.
They're more desperate, too. And we don't That's know true. What Tua we're going to get. I mean, the thing that really worries me is, and I don't, it's Teddy Bridgewater backs up Tua, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously, it's a different situation entirely if indeed Tua is just not able to follow through with the whole game. I think Cincinnati's just in a desperate situation. They got off to a really poor start. Everybody's looking at from the offensive line to Burrow hanging onto the ball too much and being the most sacked quarterback in the league. I think they have got to – national TV and the whole world is watching. Mm-hmm. Send the message. We still need to be considered one of the better teams in football. I think they have more to lose. Therefore, I believe they are going to win.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I'm kind of betting on the fact that Cincinnati's just not that good, which I think is a legit possibility,
especially with the offensive line.
Yeah, I think it's a legit possibility. So that's kind of why I'm leaning that way. But I'm excited about this game. I mean, Miami stays undefeated, right, if they win. Cincinnati, if they lose, all of a sudden you're looking at a defending champ 1-3 in what is a pretty difficult division. Baltimore looked really good this year if Lamar Jackson can stay healthy. Cleveland is off to a better start than we all thought that they were going to be. They're one of the best offenses in the NFL, the Browns are. I mean, you can thank Kareem Hunt for that. But a real good Thursday night football game. I'm leaning Miami on this one. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Who on the Texans counts as a foundational piece? And what expiring contracts do you want back most from a Houston Astro perspective? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I just told you I punched in a little Miami money line. Look, I haven't been good with the NFL this week, but it's been so much fun, or this year, but it's been so much fun laying down my wagers at BetUS.com. You should too. Back for their 28th year of NFL action. They also have the industry's biggest sign-up bonus of up to 200%. BetUS is giving you money. And they also offer their members the opportunity to cash in on all of your favorite leagues, the NFL, college football, NBA, Major League Baseball. It's all going on, and BetUS has it all. BetUS also, while you're sweating your sports bets, has hundreds of new casino games, including the coolest European slots, live dealers waiting for you at the tables. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity. You need to know that you're going to get paid, and you need a sportsbook that offers everything. Live betting is always very fun. MMA, you got some fights this weekend in a building that will not have fans. Golf, horses, esports, and all kinds of crazy bets and your favorite parlays. Call today at 1-800-79-BETUS. That's 1-800-79-BETUS, and they'll walk you through setting up an account. Nobody in the industry gives better bonuses than BETUS. Join now, mention 97.5, and you can get up to 200% in bonuses on your first deposit. Nobody beats that. Head to BETUS.com. Join today. That's BETUS, where the game begins.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Our Twitchers seem to be kind of divided on this Thursday night football. Degenerate gambler can't take the Bengals serious anymore. They lost to Trubisky. Trubisky has a Pro Bowl appearance. Mr. Brostash.
Stop writing that. Matt Schaub does, too.
I honestly, I just mentioned that as a troll. I was seeing if you were paying attention. Mr. Brostash, I think Cincinnati will eventually get it right, be a wild card team, but I don't think that starts tonight. I think Miami is the better team. Maybe they aren't divided. Maybe they're pro-Miami, which I wish I could have my bet back. If I knew that Twitch was going to be all over Miami tonight, I would not have bet on Miami.
Take the Bengals, yeah.
I would not have bet
on
Miami.
You do what everybody does to BK.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, BK
whatever
with
BK
us.
BK says, you do the other.
Everybody fades BK?
Yes.
Really?
You'd be so rich if you'd faded me.
What's your record so far this year?
No barbershop can fade the way people fade BK.
No. Not even
Jeremy,
the barbershop.
Jeremy's wife has said, never get a fade.
My wife does not like fades.
No fades.
She's anti-fade.
Why's that?
She doesn't like them. That's really, I mean, she doesn't like them.
Well, she's honest and she tells him. I mean, that's something to say when, well, you wouldn't know, but that's what, when your wife is actually honest and tells you what she really means.
Yeah.
That's pretty big.
That's a rarity.
Yeah, very much so.
She doesn't like it. She thinks they're ugly.
On you or just on anybody?
I don't think she likes anything on me.
Okay.
I think most of
my
haircuts.
Well, that's how you had another kid. I don't know if you know that or not.
It's my personality that got that
if
done.
If she likes
it's
nothing my personality. On you, then you probably have a child.
And she married me for my personality, not my looks. I have a killer personality, some would say. Anyways, what side are you? What is your record?
I don't know.
Well, mine's bad. I'll tell you what mine is. Mine's brutal.
I'm below 40% on the season. I don't know exactly what it is.
You're better than me.
Okay.
I'm 6-18 against the spread this year.
Oh.
I'm a bad start. But you know what?
Brendan,
I'm like
notate
Bregman.
That, please.
I'm not hiding it. Like, I'll be happy to tell you. Anytime you ask me, I'll tell you what my record is against the spread. That's fine. Last year, I was good. I was really good. This year, I've been opposite.
Yeah, you're worse than me.
Bad.
I don't know what I am, but I know I'm not that bad.
Bad.
Uh-huh. But if you really want to impress me, you do that over the course of an entire season.
Go 6-18 yeah. every time.
And then you go to the Waffle House.
Yeah, that's what we're looking
for. That's 24%. That's 25%. I'm winning it at 25% clip. I would fire myself.
Brag about that.
Three
yeah,
weeks. I mean, I'm not bragging about it. This isn't a brag. I'm not flexing blinkers.
Not a random brag. You're not going to be on the wheelhouse.
No, I'm just we always talk about how we're transparent. We're always true. Honest with our listeners. This is what I'm doing. I'm not flexing that I'm 6-18 and pushing people to my betting site.
You should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're better than BK.
You're 75% accurate.
That's right, I am.
No handicapper out there can hit at that clip. That's what I said throughout my 2021 football season. Yeah. You could say that about you.
See Vegas Dave.
Well, I hear what Vegas Dave says about himself, but...
He used to.
Oh.
Now he's living in his parents' basement, I believe.
What happened there?
We used to have Vegas Dave on a show in my previous life. And Vegas Dave would tell you what you couldn't ask him. And what you had to speak about the 1 year he picked the Royals in spring training and won a boatload of cash, which caused him to carry a backpack full of money around all the time and brag about it.
Mm.
Well, one weekend after that, or a few weekends after that, he went 0-8 after not really doing so well in the previous weeks that we were having him on, toting him as the guy you need to listen to. Then he no-showed us for a week. Then we got him back on the line, and my friend Travis Johnson, who has nothing to lose as the former first-round pick of the Texans, and he said, screw that, whatever we're not allowed to ask him or talk about, I want to ask him about his 0-8.
Oh, man.
He hung up, never to be
he
heard from
up.
Again.
He hung up? Oh, you got to own it.
He was so upset by that interview ooh, no. that he moved to his parents' basement.
Well, in between, he had Holly Saunders for a time. Oh. So he had some heyday.
Wow.
When he had some better days, and then it all came crashing down.
So if I move into my parents' basement, I can get Holly Saunders?
No. That's the fallout after oh. you had Holly Saunders.
I mean, Holly Saunders put together a pretty impressive list. I mean, you could be on that trajectory.
She ain't done because she's been now for quite a while now with Oscar De La Hoya.
Right, yeah.
Before that, it was Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She is the
she
female.
She got to Cliff's Kingsbury.
Female Derek Jeter.
Ooh.
Female Derek. I think you're next on the list, though. Mostly because she's going down. She's going on a downward trajectory.
Okay. Hey, so fine,
all right, cool.
Embrace the suck, BK.
Yeah, I will not say no to that.
Did not come out the way that did not come out the way that I wanted it to come out.
Well, whoa,
that won't be a problem. That won't be a problem for me.
BK is not going to have any issues there.
No, not with Holly.
Conveniently, nuts.com is on the TV right now.
You guys
and I can't make that up.
You need to get your minds out of the gutter. Both of you are perverts. Who on the Texans count as a foundational piece?
Literally, nuts.com was on the TV.
Oh, man. That is nuts. Who counts as a foundational piece on the Texans?
Who are the foundational pieces on the Texans?
That shouldn't be that hard for you.
Jalen Petrie?
Yeah.
Defensively, I think there's at least... You can make the case for... I think that there's maybe 3.5.
Give me your 3.5.
Petrie, Stingley.
Grenard's your half?
Stingley's a fine... No. I think one between Grenard and Harris will hit. That's why I give...
I like Christian Harris a lot.
Or... Yeah. So those three. I like Grenard. I like Harris. As foundational pieces, I think they're going to be here long term. I do.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think you're assuming a little bit on a couple of those guys.
Sure.
But I'm
Petrie
with you.
Looks like he is.
Petrie's legit. I mean, that's the guy that I'm most confident in from this rookie class becoming a stud. And I think you can make a case that he's already a top three football player on this team.
Agreed.
Like, Laremy Tunsil's there. I know people rag on him for what he did last year, but he's still really freaking good when he plays. The punter is number two.
He's really
Cameron
good.
Cameron Johnson's
good.
A stud.
Yep.
And then you could make a case that Jalen Petrie might be number three right now.
Huh. Okay.
I know he doesn't have the skins on the wall that a guy like Brandon Cooks or, you know, John Grenard. Obviously, last year was very impressive. But
Green quickly is climbing the charts to be foundational piece.
Yeah. We're going to talk about this on our show. Like, how many rookies are top 10 players on the Texans? Because I think you could make a case that maybe four or five already are.
I think when you see Christian Harris, he's going to enter the conversation.
Who's I'm the with fifth?
You. Well, you got Pierce, Petrie,
right.
Stingley, Green.
Yep.
Pierce would... No. Would you already say Pierce?
Harris
would be the fifth.
Okay,
if he comes back and does what I'm with you, Joel. I think Christian Harris will immediately be the best linebacker on this team.
I was really excited when they drafted him. I thought that they got a steal there. I thought that guy is going to be an impactful player for them.
Which that statement's good and bad because it means, okay, good for Christian Harris. It also means that the Texan linebacking core has been atrocious.
Love he hadn't hit that.
Worst position group of the Texans, including quarterback.
Tight end?
No. I would put the linebackers ahead of both tight end and quarterback as the worst position group on this team.
But Kirksey's a star.
Okay, you're making fun of James Palmer for saying that. This is a team that gave up 280 rushing yards.
That,
look, we knocked the tight end group, and look, I still don't think there's a whole lot of juice in that room. O.J. Howard's got two touchdowns, and Jordan Akins has caught one. Now, you could also turn that around and flip that on Nick Caserio and say, those are two dudes you didn't even have open camp with
you. Why aren't you using O.J. Howard more that you said? Well, you can say early on, you can say, hey, he doesn't know the playbook yet. But after two touchdowns, well, not knowing the playbook, get him more involved. He can catch.
I'm starting to believe that O.J. Howard's probably just not very good.
I don't believe that.
Three teams, 2 months, got cut by a Buffalo.
Different circumstances, though. Otherwise, I hear you, but I just think he was playing with some veteran teams that had some guys on the horizon, too. Or already on the roster, and they were maybe looking for him as the depth guy, and he didn't want to be the depth guy, and he didn't want to play behind Gronk. And I think he can play a little bit.
We know he can run the seam route.
Yeah.
So any play that involves a tight end running a seam, so get OJ Howard Holly out there.
That was more dumb. Mm.
Yeah, we were. That was about
that
5 minutes
previously,
ago.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's in the past.
Yeah, in the moment.
Haven't seen that on tape yet.
Mm-hmm. How about offensively?
Maybe soon.
What are the foundational pieces offensively? We mentioned Kenyon Green. Would you count Damian Pierce a foundational piece? Because Blanker's over there says
not.
No.
Yeah, I heard y'all talking about this earlier. Yes, but
no,
he's not enough. Like, you need more around Damian Pierce.
Well, my argument is running backs are a dime a dozen.
Right.
And the value has gone way down, just like the receiver value has gone out through the roof. And I believe he's replaceable. So then foundational pieces normally aren't easily replaceable.
So that's more of a take on the running back position as a whole. Like, how many running backs in the league do you think are foundational pieces? Like,
right. I mean,
Jonathan Taylor, Derrick Henry.
Before he got hurt,
okay.
They're still counting on him to be one.
Yeah, I mean, if you have that argument, you could say, like, there are five or fewer foundational running backs in the league. Because I'm with you. Like, that's a very easy position to replace. You can find undrafted guys. You could find mid-round guys. You could pick up dudes and be perfectly fine at that spot. So, yeah, look, that position has lost so much value over the years. I think Damian Pierce is a guy who could be here for a number of years, and I love what I've seen from him thus far. But, of course, his value, because of his position, does not compare to Derek Stingley or Jalen Petrie or a Christian Harris potentially. So I see where you're coming from there.
The two that we didn't get to earlier that I think is a good conversation are the bookends on the offensive line. Laremy Tunsil, who's one of the better tackles in the NFL. Tytus Howard, who already has had his fifth-year option picked up. So unless the Texans are waiving him or something like that, will be a member of the Houston Texans in 2023. Either one of those guys foundational pieces for the Texans?
Not here. Well, one's not. Tunsil's not for sure. He could be not even a foundational piece. He could be a good piece for somebody else if he proves he can still play. Like, he actually has looked better than people want to blame him for letting a guy get around him for a sack that cost him big in the Colts game and other things. But he's looked fairly good this to be where he could, maybe even at the deadline, he could be a value pick to somebody else where they could trade and get some picks and things for him. Howard's the one to me that could be, but there's just so much still to prove during this season.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think a lot of it will depend on whether or not Nick Caserio decides to re-sign.
Because the finances mean something, right?
Absolutely. Look, I think Laremy Tunsil has done enough here to have been a foundational piece for the Texans. The problem with him is the team has sucked so bad while he's been here that he hasn't been able to serve the purpose that he was initially brought in to serve. So I think he's good enough to obviously be a foundational piece. And, yeah, I don't know. I haven't loved what I've seen from Titus Howard thus far. Glad he's finally playing right tackle. But picking up a fifth-year option, that's not a huge vote of confidence for me. So whether or not the Texans decide to extend Titus Howard next offseason, that'll be the telltale.
I think both of them are. I think Laremy Tunsil's never going to... Yeah, I do. I don't think Laremy Tunsil's ever going to get the return that you would want from a Laremy Tunsil, and then you're going to end up keeping him. And left tackles can play in the league for a long time. He's 28. And then Titus Howard, to me, has been good at right tackle, and I think that he's part of the long-term plans. People are crushing me on the text line saying 6 of 18 is 33%, one-third. I'm 6 and 18. I've won 6 of the 24. That is a quarter. What's coming up on the Wheelhouse today?
Math. I've got a positive spin on the Texans 0-2-1 start.
Oh, boy.
I think you guys will like this. I think this is right up the embrace the suck alley.
It's not a stop the suck. So it's an embrace the suck.
I think you guys will enjoy where I'm coming from here.
All right. Very good. We'll be listening.
Have a holly jolly.
Oh, my goodness.
Show, BK.
Oh, my goodness. He's Brendan. Thanks for doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.